Morning, everybody. And as I always say, big welcome if you're a guest, if you're visiting for the first time. Lovely to have you with us. My name's Matt. I have the privilege of being the minister here at Maybridge. So we're breaking off. We've been doing this mini-series on prayer. We're just breaking it off for this 1 week. And the reason is, I think Piero hinted at earlier, you may know, we're about to make some changes to how we do partnership groups at Maybridge. Those are our midweek small groups. And some of you will know something about that already, but today is a bit of an orientation, really, to the why and how. So Piero is going to say some more about that later. If you've been around church for a while, some of us I know certainly have, some of us won't have been so much, but if you've been around church for a while, you may have experienced different church small groups, and you might have some interesting experiences, some good, some bad, some in between, some strange things. About 20 years ago, I was in a church small group in Newcastle, where I was living at the time, and it was great. I was in this group for about 3 years, and we would meet every Tuesday evening at 7:30, and it was always hosted by this one couple, so it was always at their house, and it was on a Tuesday, and it was their bread baking evening, okay? So they would be baking this bread every week on a Tuesday. So we'd all arrive at 7:30, and we'd walk in, and the smell of freshly baked bread. You know it, don't you? It's a lovely, unbelievable. You walk in, freshly baked, that smells so good. I can't even focus on looking at the Bible or anything because there's this lovely, fresh smell. For 3 years, they never once offered us any of the bread. I'm not joking. It was like a sort of torture. Every Tuesday night, you get to smell this amazing bread, but not have any, ever. Anyway, as a church, our reason for being is that we follow Jesus. We know that there is every reason to believe he's God come to earth. He's the one with the answers. He's the one that knows what life is about. And basically, as a church, we are a community, a big family, working out together how we follow him. And just to say, you might be sat here and you think, well, you know, I'm not a follower of Jesus. I've come along. I'm not sure I believe in Jesus. If that's you, no worries. What you're about to hear is, I guess, a challenge for those that do. Maybe it'll give you, if you listen, a sense of what it might look like and why hopefully it's worth doing for you. I recently read this really great book, The Patient Ferment of the Early Church by Alan Crider, and it's really excellent. It's all about how in the first few centuries, the church grew exponentially from this small group of people, and it shouldn't have been possible for lots of reasons, but the church grew. And throughout this book, he tells us about the habits of the early Christians, the things they did. And so there's really loads of really interesting stuff. But one thing that really stuck with me in this book is just how committed these early Christians were to each other, how they prioritized being together. And these were people who had to work long, hard hours just to live, in pretty much every case, like many of us. But being together was a top priority. And it wasn't just because they were sort of nice, socially extroverted people. It was central to their way of life. They understood following Jesus as something that simply could not be done without close relationships. As church has developed over the centuries, it's been expressed, of course, in all sorts of ways. But regularly being in the same space has been vital. And while we often emphasize being together on a Sunday like this, which is great, it's clear that Christians have always met in smaller settings where you can do different things. When we gather like this, it's all ages and stages, and we have musicians, and somebody prepares a message like this one, and as many people as can fit in the room are welcome. But in a smaller setting, there are different advantages. It's easier to have deep discussion, to get to know one another personally, to know and to be known. And it's that smaller setting that we're going to talk about today. And because you may or may not be aware of this, but Jesus changed the world with a small group. He changed the world with a small group. So here's our starting point. This is in Luke 6, eyewitness account of Jesus' life. And early on in his ministry, he gets together a small group of people. It says, one of those days, Jesus went out to a mountainside to pray and spent the night praying to God. When morning came, he called his disciples to him and chose 12 of them, whom he also designated apostles. Simon, who he named Peter, his brother Andrew, James, John, Philip, Bartholomew, Matthew, Thomas, James, son of Alphaeus, Simon, who was called the Zealot, Judas, son of James, and Judas Iscariot, who became a traitor. Now think about this. Jesus knows at this point, he knows that he's the Son of God. He knows he's going to be executed before too long. He knows that the future of the church for the whole of history will be set up by what he does in this short period. By this moment in the story, he's done some miracles and more are on the way. Everybody's interested in him, of course. They want a piece of him. They want to see him. He's exciting. He's compelling. If he wanted to, think of this. If he wanted to, Jesus could have just done massive gatherings, maybe once a week, get everyone together, do all of his best teaching, do a load of miracles. It would be amazing and it'd be really efficient, wouldn't it? Just do all of it in one go once a week. And then he could have the rest of the week off, like church ministers do. He could have just done that. That's not true, by the way. That is not Jesus' strategy. Yes, he does loads of public things. Definitely, there are gatherings where thousands of people show up to see Jesus. But it would be fair to say the thing Jesus spends most time on is being with these 12 guys. That's the thing he spends most time on. And it seems like, even when it came to picking who was in the group, it seems there were lots of options. There were lots of followers around. He called disciples to himself, and then he picks 12. He limits it to 12. He doesn't say, okay, the more the merrier. He doesn't commit to spending lots of time with everybody. He chooses 12, and actually within that later we see he focuses on 3, in fact. Now, even before the time of Jesus, it was normal for a rabbi, a teacher, to gather disciples together. Jesus did not invent that. But where he's different is that he doesn't choose the academic cream of the crop. He chooses a diverse group of people whose big common trait is that they're willing to follow what he says. Now, with those 12 people, he began something that still changes the world to this day. You may have noticed they're all men. That's because a Jewish synagogue needed that many men to be legitimate. So Jesus was symbolically saying through his choice, essentially, this is a new synagogue, a new school of teaching, a new way. Beyond that, if you learn a little bit about these disciples, these 12 guys, these are people who should not get on, okay? You wouldn't put them in a room together. They're from the left and the right of the political spectrum. They're poor and wealthy, working class and middle class, and so on. But Jesus chooses them, and for 3 years, he's with them all the time, going for walks, meals, work and leisure. They do life together, as we say in one of our church values, not just to enjoy themselves, but with a purpose. And what he calls them is significant. It says he designated apostles. Apostles are basically messengers or representatives. So from the beginning, there was a purpose to this group. These are people who will represent Jesus to the world. It's not an inward-focused club at all. When we have small group meetings today in all sorts of churches, it's not because it's nice to have a midweek catch-up. It's actually because we're following Jesus' personal strategy for changing individuals and the world. That's how he did it. There's no debate. But let's have a little look at, let's zoom forward. What was the fruit of Jesus' investment? We're going to look forward about 3 years after Jesus picks these 12 guys. This is Acts chapter 4, okay? So they've had a few years of being in a small group with Jesus. They see him do stuff, teach things. Then he dies and is resurrected. And then he leaves them to it, so to speak, to continue being his apostles, his messengers. And things get really intense really quickly. Two of them, Peter and John, see this man get healed. They're publicly telling everyone about Jesus. And the religious leaders of the country don't like it, okay? And so here we see what happens. The next day, the rulers, the elders, and the teachers of the law met in Jerusalem. Annas the high priest was there, and so were Caiaphas, John, Alexander, and others of the high priest's family. They had Peter and John brought before them and began to question them. By what power or what name did you do this? Then Peter, filled with the Holy Spirit, said to them, Rulers and elders of the people, if we are being called to account today for an act of kindness shown to a man who is lame and are being asked how he was healed, then know this, you and all the people of Israel. It is by the name of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, whom you crucified, but whom God raised from the dead, that this man stands before you healed. Jesus is the stone you builders rejected, which has become the cornerstone. Salvation is found in no one else, for there is no other name under heaven given to mankind by which we must be saved. And here's the really crucial bit that I want us to focus on for now. When they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished. And they took note that these men had been with Jesus. So this, what I'm saying is, this is the outcome of that small group. Like, this is what it did, okay? So these guys, they're in a really intimidating atmosphere. The absolute top authorities of the whole nation are in a circle around Peter and John. They're just normal guys, fishermen. But they know their stuff. They know who Jesus is. They know what that means. They're bold and unhindered. Look at that last line again. When they saw the courage of Peter and John and realized they were unschooled, ordinary men, they were astonished and took note. These men had been with Jesus. Ordinary men, that's the thing that makes them different. They'd been with Jesus. They knew him, loved him, copied him. But how had they been with Jesus? In those intervening 3 years, they hadn't just had some nice coffees with him or had a nice comfy Bible study on a Tuesday. They'd been in a purposeful group, a group with a range of people committed to one thing, getting serious about the big questions, tackling everybody's character weaknesses, being prepared to serve and be responsible. Now, of course, it helped. Their group leader was Jesus, right? That's quite good, okay? You want that for your group leader. Can't deny that. But the way that Jesus went about helping them was not endless meandering one-to-one chats about their pet grievances. It was part of a group that had a direction that was greater than the felt needs of the individuals in it. Look at the results. The members of Jesus' group were invested in, trusted, they became initiative takers, they're secure enough in who God's made them to be, they have no qualms about speaking up to powerful people, they're in sync with God's plans for the world, they're brave, they're clear, they're humble. 3 years of intense time with Jesus in this small group, and they are changed from the inside out. So what does all this stuff Jesus did mean for how we do small groups, or we call them partnership groups at Maybridge? Well, we can put these things in different ways. But for me, the goal of our partnership groups is this: to encourage and equip as many people as possible to know Jesus, love Jesus, and copy Jesus. That's the purpose, that's the point. It's not just snappy language. It's very easy in church small groups, I've been in plenty of them, to drift into all sorts of other emphases and priorities and ideas. The big aim of a group is not to talk about your problems, to complain about church, to get on a soapbox with your opinions, to debate obscure Bible verses, and so on. The aim is to know the Son of God, cling on to his words about life, and follow him in your daily rhythms and love for other people, and to do so together. Most Christians, I find, are up for this in principle. I've even seen a few of you nod just now. How could you not be up for this if you're a Christian? But in practice, as the weeks go by, we can get sidelined. We can get distracted. And from my experience, I've boiled it down to three things that I think determine whether a group succeeds or not. These are not things in the Bible. This is just my observation, okay? Because it's very, very easy to wander off. So the key issues in small group success. The first one is direction. It is so easy to put a group together with all the best will in the world and over time to slip into what is the most comfortable thing, particularly for whoever's the group leader. Our groups are not so that we do the bit of the thing that we like the most. Speaking for myself, I love talking about the Bible. I love working out what it means. I love telling people my opinions about it. But the group is not only about that, right? But if I'm leading a group, it can easily end up being nothing more than a good intellectual discussion, because that's enjoyable for me. Doesn't mean I'm growing, though, or anybody else in the group is. And we're all different. Others of us would spend the whole meeting in prayer. Others would talk in detail about their suffering every week and sharing it. Others would talk about something in church they'd like to change. Others would have a cup of tea and keep it nice and light and social. And it's not that all of those things are bad on their own, but they can miss the purpose, that our groups are about becoming like Jesus, that in a group with direction, not only are our opinions shared, but our affections are shaped. That's the point. The group that Jesus led were challenged repeatedly about their faith and their love. In other words, who they trusted and how they loved other people. Read the Gospels, and that's what Jesus is always talking about with them. That was always on the agenda, every week. But the next thing is depth. Some of us are great at talking. We can small talk all day, whether it's the weather or football or what's on TV. And there is a place for that. We don't want to just be intense all the time. However, sometimes I think there is a fear, and I use a word that's strong on purpose, there's a fear of personal depth. Someone once said, the greatest human desire is to be known, and the greatest human fear is to be known. And often in the name of making people feel at home or because we're a bit tired that day, we settle for surface conversations, never speaking with any depth about our insecurities or sins or deepest questions. It's possible to be in a group or even a friendship for years and never be truly known, which is such a shame. No, our groups need to have depth, working out together how we put the teaching of Jesus into practice in our own circumstances. And sure, you know, there will sometimes be things that are a bit heavy for that context and places where we need to drill down into something. But for most of us, most of the time, we need to be able to share what's going on with us. That's one kind of depth. And figure out what following Jesus means with that stuff going on. That's the other kind of depth. A depthless group is dull and will produce very little. But I love when you look at how Jesus interacted with his group. It's never boring, but he really confronts them all the time with stuff. And you don't see loads of them getting into super complicated theological debates, but there's loads about their character and their flaws and changing. There's no recorded conversation about Jesus debating with his disciples theological concepts like Calvinism or Arminianism. But there are records in the Gospels where he intervenes because they're arguing about which one of them is the best. Right? It's so human. But that's the depth that goes places, not just sharing our deepest, innermost secrets, but intentionally speaking, intentionally inviting others to speak the ways of Jesus into our lives. And we all need it. The third thing is dedication. A group only works if people are committed to it, when they show up, when they're present. I've been in many small groups in my life, and there's groups where, you know, you'll have somebody who shows up once every 6 weeks. And that's, you work it out, that's about 8 times a year. Now, assuming it's for about 2 hours, right, a group gathering, that's a combined 16 hours a year. That is not going to get you very far in terms of knowing others, being known, moving forward with God together. And if you're somebody in a group and you're one of the ones that makes it a priority, you know how it feels when somebody else doesn't make the commitment, doesn't show up for some really weak reason. Because you love them and it hurts a bit when someone else doesn't commit. Now, I get it. Some of us have different things. We've got shift work. We've got other commitments. We've got kids and so on. There are definitely legitimate reasons why it's a struggle in modern life. But surely, we can be innovative about spending time together if we're actually up for it. You know, why not eat together? You're going to eat anyway, right? You could even bake some bread. Well, why not, you know, meet at an unusual time of day? I'm always amazed, and I'm being quite heavy this morning, aren't I? I'm always amazed when people can't make it regularly to a group, but have no problem being at every leisure activity under the sun. We are followers of Jesus, those of us that have signed up to it. It is literally impossible to obey most of what he said without being in close community with other followers of Jesus. It can't be done. Loving other people, sharing your burdens, using your gifts, you can't do most of what he says without other people that you spend time with in real relationships. Can't be done. And of course, it's not just a weekly meeting. It's things like engaging with messages when people share prayer requests and answers to prayers. It's getting in touch when someone has a job interview. It's asking about their family. It's taking a meal round when it's helpful. It's all the scaffolding that means that a bunch of committed relationships is not just a mutual chore that you go through. Now, you might ask, okay, right, I get that a smaller community where we know each other is great. Do I have to be in a Maybridge partnership group if I'm at this church? No. No, you don't. You have the choice. Partnership groups are a helpful thing, I think, that we coordinate as a church. And I do get that for some of us, that it really is genuinely a challenge, which is partly why we're making some changes. So you don't have to be in a group, but find what works. Find what works. All of us can spend intentional time with others where we do more than have tea and cake and a chat, where we can ask questions and share struggles and be accountable and look at the Bible and dream dreams and so on without an official partnership group. But please don't do nothing. Please don't do nothing. Please find how it works for you to be in those close relationships. So three things: direction, depth, dedication. Miss any of those and a group or a community is in trouble. But if you do them, do you know what? It's actually enjoyable, because relationships are what we were made for in the first place. They're actually the point of life with God and with other people. So they actually become enjoyable when everybody participant does these things. Handing over to Piero.
Thank you, Matt. So again, just, oh, hello. Oh, thanks. I have the power with the stick. If you are new to church, let me say, add to what Matt said. If you're still exploring or trying out Maybridge for the first time, I just want to say, I'm sorry that you might not follow along with all of this. But I hope that you might hear about some opportunities to grow and get stuck in with church life in a small group context here at Maybridge in the future. And please hear that we want to be the kind of church that is welcoming and that gives opportunities to explore faith and do life together in a way that helps everyone, wherever you are on your journey with Jesus, to grow towards him. And so, as Matt hinted at, this year we're changing how we structure our partnership groups at Maybridge. And so I just wanted to share a little bit about what that looks like. And so from September this year... Oh, also, by the way, Joel Banyard did these cute little illustrations for us, so do say well done to him if you see him afterwards. So, as Matt said, we're changing how we structure partnership groups at Maybridge, and just wanted to say a little bit about what that looks like. So from September of this year, we're moving into this rhythm where partnership groups will run on an annual cycle, and I'm a visual person, so that's why there's a little circular diagram there. And so once a year, we're going to be encouraging the church family to commit to a particular partnership group community by opening registrations over August and September. The church family, you will be able to choose from a catalogue of groups and join and register online at maybridge.org.uk/groups. You can head there to have a little preview of what it would look like, but you won't be able to sign up to anything yet. But that's where you'll be able to sign up for a group. Everything will be visible, and there'll also be opportunities to sign up in person with forms and things like that. And so the idea is that our groups will run over 11 months, pausing over the summer for 1 month. When groups close and registration opens again for the next yearly cycle. So the meeting frequency and the times of groups will continue to vary as they do at the moment. Many groups sometimes wish to meet weekly, some twice a month, but it's still up to leaders how and when groups meet. And this often means, which is a great benefit to us, that groups continue to vary in their expression. Some might follow along with church takeaways, which is what we produce as a church to help people unpack the teaching from Sunday. They might follow different courses or their own materials. That's still very much up to leaders, and we hope that that will all be able to be clear when people sign up to groups so you have an idea of what's happening. And so we hope that this should enable church partners to find a community that best aids their growth and their spiritual maturity. And just a note about pausing groups, as we make this shift, all groups come to an end in their current form over the next couple of weeks or so. And we're doing this pause for longer this year to clearly mark this change in how we're doing things. And this also gives a break for our current leaders and gives us time to refocus and equip existing and new leaders because we don't want to just throw people together in a group. But we're taking this opportunity that pausing our groups brings to host courses, workshops and events to help you grow and stay connected. And I'll tell you more about how you can register for these courses in one moment, because I'm going to intersperse notices just to check that you're still listening and paying attention. So why are we changing groups, and what are our hopes for this? So if you're a partner here, you would hopefully have received an email and read it. Some people in my group did not, which was hilarious. But in that email, there's more plans and reasonings, as well as FAQs, and they're also available in this booklet form in the foyer on the desk at the back. So please grab one and take one if you want to find out more. But here is a quick overview. So over the past few years, we've explored different modules that churches use to support small group discipleship. And having listened to the feedback of group leaders and members of this church, it became clear that there was a lack of clarity around the focus for groups and the role of leaders. Groups have now outgrown their capacity, and whilst the groups that do exist are highly appreciated by those in them, and I would like to say thank you to all partnership group leaders that are currently here, whilst they are highly appreciated by those in them, they can often be difficult to access for new members. And previously, the idea has been that a group keeps inviting new people and grows to the point where they multiply and they can no longer fit in a room. But this has had limited success, and groups have slowly become inward-looking and settled. And so can I just take the time to say again that if you've had to wait a long time to be part of a partnership group, I know that there are many in this room. I'm so sorry that that has been your experience, and I want to say thank you for your patience. Know that you haven't been forgotten about, and part of the reason why we want to transition to this new way of structuring groups is to create the environment where more groups can form and for them to be more visible and easier to access. Over the last few years, it's been clear, and if you've come along to the Lifelines meetings that we do or AGMs, it's pretty obvious that our church is growing. Our ministries are growing, and we've since had some amazing stories of people coming to faith through our projects and through Alpha, which is wonderful. But with this growth brings a welcome challenge for us as a church. It reflects poorly on the welcome of a church. If groups remain closed, people have to be allocated to a group by the office and wait a long time to join a group. And if we also have no model for growing new leaders or forming new groups. Our desire as a church is that everyone has a chance to be part of a supportive, discipling and challenging small group that encourages and equips people to know Jesus, to love Jesus and to copy Jesus. Our hope is that over time, a refreshed vision for partnership groups, a new structure for groups that is outward in focused, will make it easier for newcomers to join groups, give space for leaders to rest, which is a big bugbear of mine, and create opportunities for groups, members to try other groups, develop new friendships, and to encourage new leaders to come up as they grow. So this is one big challenge, and it's one that will take a whole church effort. And so I hope that you'll join us in our vision to see partnerships become increasingly open and loving communities that support and disciple one another. And so there are a couple of ways, as we move into notices, that you can journey with us. Number one, please stay connected over the summer. Get stuck in with the courses and workshop events and groups as groups come to an end. It could be easy to drift from intentional community over this time, but I strongly believe, and I'm very excited about all of the courses that are coming up, that God has some deep work to do amongst us, and we're really excited again about everything that's on offer. And so please do head to maybridge.org.uk/summer, pick up one of these flyers that will give you an idea of what's happening. There's some absolutely fantastic things coming up. Courses, which let me just clarify that if you can't make all of them, all of the dates to some of the courses, no worries. There's ways that we can catch you up, apart from 321, which is outward focused. And I'm not sure whether you can share the videos or not. But anyway, do have a look at that and don't let that stop you from signing up. There's workshops and worship events that are happening, which are one-off small things here at the church again, led by different members of staff and volunteers, ranging from what does faith and menopause look like to worship evenings and how you work out finance and things. So all the information is online, so please do sign up so we can get an idea of groups. As well as these things, there's also lots of socials and things, ways that you can stay connected with our men's and our women's group. Again, all the dates are on the screen, and you can sign up to those at maybridge.org.uk/events, or speak to myself, Duncan Slaney, if he's here, and Tim Weller, if you're, or Joe Bauer at the back, if you want to find out more about the men's group, and Christelle, Tasha McNaught, and Susie White, if you'd like to find out more. There's probably more people, but just yell at someone to point you in that direction. And then secondly, we'd love to for all of our current group leaders to continue leading. Or if you would think about, if you're sat and you're thinking, maybe I could give that a try just for a year, please pray over it. Please do get in touch over the next week or so to find out more. We've shared descriptions of roles with the church family, but they're also available again in this green booklet. So it's clear what's involved, and you can ask me or Matt anything about it and let us know that it's something that you're interested in. We're holding partnership group leaders training over the summer, as I said, two sessions in July and one in August, to refocus our groups and invest in new and current leaders. And then finally, I don't think there's a slide for this, but I'd just like to add probably one that's under the title of Welcome, Support and Encourage. I want to be clear that no group structure is going to be perfect. And so please bear with us, bear with one another as we work through doing groups in this new way. Please be on the lookout for one another over the summer, particularly those that often end up being on the edges of church. Invite others to groups when they restart. Encourage people to join groups. Hold one another accountable for their commitment to a group in conversation. Share stories with how it's impacting your faith and life. The new term might mean that you're no longer in a group with people that you were previously. And I know that this, from personal experience, this can be disorientating and costly. I'm not going to sugarcoat it. But in my experience, it's also been one of the most rewarding opportunities and times where Jesus has accelerated my spiritual growth and that of others in the group as well. I believe that we're going to end in prayer because I don't think we have time to sing. If you are a parent and you've got kids at the Keystone Centre, please do go and collect them. But for the remaining of us, I just wondered if you spend a few moments in your rows with one another praying, and a couple of things that you can be praying for. Please pray that our church will be welcoming, that we would be the kind of church that supports people in every step of their spiritual journey. Please pray for more leaders to come up to lead groups. Pray this summer will be a time of great growth and acceleration for everyone in the church family. And pray most of all that we would remain united in our desire to follow Jesus, to know him, to love him. And I copy him, and I put that in the wrong order. Sorry, Matt. So if you need to go and get your kids, please do so sharpishly, otherwise Ruth will get annoyed with me. But please turn to the person next to you and pray, and then I'll close us off before we go.